But, so today is sort of like one of those cool, it's a birthday, but, you know, it's only a partial birthday, because it was 25 years ago today that we had the Queen in town, downtown on Parliament Hill, and as she often does, she signs stuff when she's here, and this one was that time she signed the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which, as well as the Constitution Act of 1982, which included, amongst other things, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, as well as a patriot of the Constitution giving control over it to the government of Canada rather than, you know, the House of Commons in Britain. Since then, we've been able to amend the Constitution ourselves, which we've gave a kick at the can a couple of times. But more importantly, I think that the Charter of Rights and Freedoms has come to dominate how we think of rights within Canada. And just, you could see Beverly McLaughlin, who's the Chief Justice. That's the one. Sorry, I can't think this morning. And the Supreme Court was in Toronto having sort of a discussion about it over the weekend, and there's countering one of the usual criticisms, which is that it expands too much rights and sort of lets criminals out on the road, which I don't think is sort of I certainly agree with Ms. McLaughlin's position, I should say, without sort of equivocating. But there's a couple of things that have come up. The usual criticisms of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms are that it gives too much power to the courts, that it expands rights too far, so that you do have sort of abilities to get guilty or so-called guilty people, and I use finger quotes here, to get off from crimes because of some sort of loophole, and I use, again, finger quotes there, that it sort of expands individual liberty in ways that society perhaps did not want to go to. We were forced to have the gay marriage discussion in large part because of charter decisions and so forth. And thirdly, that it doesn't include economic rights like,
healthcare, welfare.
Oh, I was going to say property.
Oh, that too.
But at the same time, from the left side of things, that it doesn't include a lot of the social services that we would come to expect. And so last week there was an article about how the Charter has been interpreted, you know, conservatively, that it sort of protects things like that it tends to rule on the side of the government with regards to what the government is obligated to do and sort of giving as much power to legislatures for control of spending. So there's no obligation, as an example, to provide assistance to autistic children. There's no requirement for things like healthcare. Well, they did find the healthcare ruling is interesting, actually, but for social services and that sort of thing. Finally, that the Charter has also, there is no specific labor rights protection, that it's legal to legislate someone back to work.
Which we might talk about later.
Which we probably will talk about later. So all of these things, and I think it's tough to sort of divorce ourselves from what's going on. And of course, we sort of see politics blanket itself in the Charter as well. The really terrible Hail Mary pass that was all but thrown in the wrong direction in the last election was, of course, to, change the Charter so that you can't get rid of that you can't use the notwithstanding clause, which is, of course, all a bit silly. But I think these are sort of interesting things, and that they've changed how we think about rights in Canada, going from sort of this, of course we have rights, we just don't have them written down anywhere, to something where we have a very loose but broadly interpreted document, which sort of defines pretty much all sorts of rights.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple interesting things there. I think that first of all is with regards to sort of healthcare rulings and such, is that, well, there's sort of the left-wing criticism of the Charter and that it doesn't include these sort of basic rights within the Charter. I think is that if you look at Supreme Court rulings, especially provincial Supreme Court rulings on the basis of the Charter, is that you do have many cases that the Charter is interpreted sort of to grant these positive rights. And sort of you look at rulings, especially in BC, where they said, you have to make sure that certain amounts of funding go towards specific causes and specific things, such as providing interpretation for hearing hearing impaired people and so forth. And there's even been, interestingly enough, rulings in like Nova Scotia where they've said that people do have the right to access things like in vitro fertilization and such. However, in the end, they use a Section 1 ability to override that. So they said, like, yeah, your rights are infringed upon, but it's a legitimate infringement by the government. And I also think that the other interesting thing that comes up is the fact that there was a Section 1 included, and that there's an important government objective. It can overrule rights, because as most people probably know, such a thing does not exist in the United States.
Yeah, I think that's the big difference, that in the United States, where you sort of almost come up with ways of explaining why this isn't necessarily a right, if at all, that in Canada everything is a right and you just figure out a reason to limit it. But joining us now is Mr. Patrick Ryan, who has come all the way in this morning to talk with us about the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So, 25 years later, Patrick.
Good.
That's okay. I was hoping for a little more discussion.
Came all the way for one word answer.
Well, I just finished a class in the political science department here that was almost exclusively devoted to the left-wing critique of the Charter, which I really didn't know about, and it definitely disputes the sort of the traditional narrative that we're reading in every newspaper this week, and points to things like, in terms of the unintended consequences of the Charter, certainly social conservatives like to talk about that with different sexual orientation items and things along those lines. But there's things that the left, I think, was quite disappointed about, too. RJR McDonald, where tobacco companies are still allowed to advertise because they're entitled to free speech. CBOR struck down a rape shield law. Not as many pure laws being struck down, but also then just the courts upholding governments that many people on the left aren't pleased with, particularly labor law. There was a lot of unfortunate decisions in the early 90s, where certainly the freedom of association was interpreted by many people to mean the right to unionize or the right to strike, the right to bargain, and the courts disagreed with them for a long time.
I think actually what's interesting about that is you have sort of the disagreement on both sides. You have sort of the people on the social conservative side who disagree with rulings like abortion and same-sex marriage, and then on the left-hand side as well. I think that's reflective sort of another numbers that I heard recently from somewhere about the percentage of people who want elected judges. And while I think the analysis there is not necessarily is that it reflecting that elected judges are a good idea, but just that you have a lot of people who are disillusioned with the process and feel that judges are very disconnected from society and feel that judges sort of aren't accountable and aren't recognizing the values that the majority of Canadians hold.
I think a lot of that just comes from courts have always been an easy target for populists, be it on the right or on the left, usually on the right, and it's just easy to explain that these are sort of ivory tower elites and then paint the worst decisions, that, you know, they're slowing the system down when it should be that all the easier to, you know, convict criminals. Whereas I think that there's sort of there isn't as much of an argument, and it's a more nuanced argument that we're all better off when there's greater protection for the innocent, and also that you have procedural fairness to protect you from an overreaching government.
Well, and I think part of the critique when it's coming from ideologues is certainly an unjustified optimism in the popularity of their own ideas. In this class, we looked at Ted Morton has a book on the Charter, which, you know, we're all familiar with him now that he's had a profile in Alberta politics, but basically said, of course, Canadians would, you know, vote to ban gay marriage, would vote to ban abortion, and all kinds of things like that, which I don't think is that clear anymore. And then
he also thought that obviously Albertans would vote for Ted Morton, which
yeah, exactly.
That clear.
And then on the left, you know, we'd have the same thing from very left wing professors that say, of course, Canadians would uphold a complete right to strike. Of course they would uphold a rape shield law. You know, for every example, then to dispute an unelected judge, you have to be convinced that in an election your side would win. And I don't think that either of those sides can be so so arrogant about that kind of thing.
And I mean, getting back to what Adam was saying, that usually when you see criticisms like this from sort of both extremes on the left and right, I think that the conservative side might be a little more vocal. It sort of demonstrates that, for the most part, a reasonable middle-of-the-road approach has been taken, and that, you know, for all the sort of, I mean, there's certainly been a greater expansion of rights, and I think it's an important question to ask whether had we not had a Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that, you know, 25 years later we would see things like legislated gay allowances for gay marriage and all those other sort of, you know, social progresses that we've made and been at the cutting edge of the world on, or of the cutting edge, leading edge, would have happened without that. But I think certainly sort of as the popular consensus in Canada changed, we sort of start reflecting the how we see these things in the Charter as well. And that while it leads a bit, it also sort of not as much as perhaps people would like.
Well, and certainly the court has, the McLaughlin Court in a couple of cases has refused to make, you know, sort of recognize a legal right to services and to government spending in a lot of the cases, the autistic children being the most recent. And so it's showing a reluctance to really determine policy in areas where you're talking about huge budgetary implications. And I think most of the victories that people on the left is certainly like to hold up are mostly, I think, social policy that don't have many fiscal ramifications. And so certainly when people talk about what they would like to see in the Charter would be some more positive rights, some entitlements, like you see in a lot of European constitutions.
Yeah, I think is in the vast majority of decisions have been decisions that are obviously controversial due to sort of the nature of the social element of them. But I think is that you haven't had that aspect of legislation sort of in any way, and people often try and construe it, and especially in attacks on the Charter and attacks in the court have tried to construe it as, you know, judges making decisions that they shouldn't be and making laws and so forth. And I think is that that was also sort of what was talked about, especially from the Conservative, or PC party at the time, I guess, what was going to happen when you implement the Charter. I think is that in general, other than sort of fear-mongering and very specific examples, I don't think that that has happened, and that sort of those fears that were espoused in early 1980s just haven't come true.
I think one thing that we haven't really talked about so far, which when talking about the Charter is something that really you have to, if only because no one ever mentions it, is the notwithstanding clause. And, of course, that was sort of the critical part of the getting the deal in the kitchen cabinet, Night of the Long Knives, we'll use the Quebec nationalist nomenclature. And so I think it's important to sort of reflect on how that's been used so rarely, despite being for
twice,
all of these...
Twice, more specifically.
Well, regularly in Quebec, but a couple of times anyway. But I think what we should do first is take a quick break, and we'll be back just after this.